Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Jaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Nasta Prayeshu Apadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead. Narayan. Unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being. Unto Mother Saraswati. Unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with, is established as? So what does that mean, an irrevocable fact? What does that mean, irrevocable fact? Say that again. Yes. How about any... Not yet. What's an irrevocable fact mean? Gorchun. Gorchun. Duh. Prabhu.
It can't be taken back.
Can't be taken back. Irrevocable means it can't be taken back. It means whatever little progress we make is always there. Even we might have forgotten we made some progress, it's there. And Krishna, because he is all-powerful, will remind you of the progress that you've made at some point or other. So let's take a minute to pray to the Lord to help us remember him. Do that, okay? Hare Krishna. Okay, we're on text. We have a really interesting verse today. We have first canto, second chapter, third verse. So we're on 1, 2, 3 today. Cute, huh? Sutta Uvacha. And this is Govindam. Yam Pravajantam Anupekam Apeta Krityam. It's different? Am I on the wrong verse? Oh, yeah, I have to turn the page because 3 is up. Shall I do it again? I'm sorry. Pray to Krishna that he'll help us. He's very kind. Yatsnats. Spanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Yatsvanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Yatsvanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Yatsvanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Adhyatma deepam atitirti chatam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitirti.
That's a tongue twister. Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Samsharinam karunayaha purana guyam.
Samsharinam karunayaha purana
guyam. Samsarinam karunayaha purana guyam.
Samsarinam karunayaha purana guyam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurun muninam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurun muninam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurun muninam.
Tam
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti sharam ekam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir atitir shatam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir shatam tamondyam.
Samsarinam karunaya purana purana guyam.
Samsarinam karunaya purana guyam.
Tam vyasa sunam apayami gurun muninam.
Tam vyasa sunam apayami gurun muninam.
Please chant.
Akila shruti saram ekam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Samsarinam
karunaya purana guhyam. Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurum muninam.
Yasvanubhavam
akila shruti saram ekam.
Adhyatma
deepam atitir shatam tamondyam.
Samsarinam karunaya purana guyam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami guru muninam.
Students? We're all students.
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti saram ekam. Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Samsarinam karunaya purana guyam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurum muninam.
Students?
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti saram ekam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Samsarinam karunaya purana guhyam.
Samsarinam
karunaya purana guhyam. Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurun muninam.
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti saram ekam.
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti saram ekam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam.
Adhyatma deepam atitir satam tamondyam. Samsarinam karunaya purana guyam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurum muninam.
Tam vyasa sunam upayami gurum muninam.
Yasvanubhavam akila shruti saram ekam.
yat svanu bhavam akila shruti sharam ekam adhyatma ditam atitir shishatam tamondyam samsarinam karunaya purana guyam ya he who svaanubhavam self-assimilated experienced akila all round shruti the Vedas sharam cream. Do you remember that word from last time? It was a couple of weeks back. Sharam was essence, so we use that example about the cream is the essence of the milk. So again, here's that word, shruti sharam ekam. Okay, so one, sharam, cream, ekam, the only one, adhyatma, transcendental, deepam, torchlight, atitir shatam, desiring to overcome. Tama andam, deep dark material existence. Samsarinam, of the materialistic men. Karunaya, out of causeless mercy. Aha, said. Purana, supplement to the Vedas. Guyam, very confidential. Tam, unto him, Vyasasunam, the son of Vyasadeva. Upayami, let me offer my obeisances. Gurum, the spiritual master. Muninam, of the great sages. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyas, who, out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it by experience. Hare, Hare Bol. Let's say it together. It's a little wordy, but let's try to think of the meaning, okay? Together. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all the sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest region of material existence, spoke his most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it by experience. So if someone was going to say this verse in their own words, they could possibly say, Sutta Goswami, because that's who's speaking this verse. Sutta Goswami is speaking this verse. He's offering his respectful obeisances to Sukadev Goswami. So Sutta is offering his respects to Sukadev, and he's saying, Sukadev was so kind. Out of his compassion for those of us who are struggling in material existence, he spoke this great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the cream of all Vedic scriptures. Okay? So that's what's being said here. Now, Prabhupada has a kind of a long purport, and I'm going to read it bit by bit, because if I read the whole thing, you'd be not paying attention. So, Omagina timirandasya jananjana salakaya chaksu udmilitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was just like one of those gross materialists struggling, and I didn't even know it. I was just struggling in material life. But my spiritual master came and forced open my eyes with the torchlight, the deep, it's mentioned here, the deep, the torchlight of knowledge. So I'm totally internally indebted to him, life after life. So you guys heard the best thing. You heard the verse, and You guys will hear the rest, the purport. Hare Krishna. So, purport, in this, by Srila Prabhupada, in this prayer, Srila Sutta Goswami practically summarizes the complete introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural supplementary commentary on Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras, or Brahma Sutras, were compiled by Vyas with a view to presenting just the cream of Vedic knowledge. So this introduction that we've gotten so far, we're in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. So that first chapter was the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, and it told us what the book is going to be based on. And in fact, it mentioned six questions that the sages asked in order to enthuse Sukadeva Goswami to speak the Bhagavatam. So those six questions are the basis of the whole book. So very quickly, we'll remember what those six questions were and are. And here's a little plug for the online Srimad Bhagavatam course that Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu and Sama Priya have put out. They've pointed out these six questions of the sages, and we had to learn them. Because otherwise, it's easy to miss some of those questions because the questions were often put in the form of a statement. So the first question that the sages ask is in the ninth verse of the first chapter. And they're asking, what's the ultimate good for all people? So here's the theme. The theme of these questions, you see what the mood of the sages are. The second question, they're asking what the essential teachings are. Of all the teachings, what's the essential teachings? And the third question they ask is in the 12th verse, what was the purpose of Lord Krishna's incarnation? And the next one is in the 14th verse, please describe the transcendental incarnations of the Lord and his pastimes. The fifth one is in the 15th verse, and narrate. So here, the fourth and the fifth are similar, but there's a slight difference. The fourth one, they're asking for what's the Lord's pastimes. The fifth one, they're asking what's the incarnations of the Lord and his pastimes in relation to the creation and maintenance of the world. So it's a slight difference, but it's a whole different topic. And then the sixth question is, where, now that Krishna has left the planet, where have the religious principles gone for shelter now that Krishna has departed? So those six questions show that the great sages, they weren't interested just in their own spiritual advancement. They're asking questions for the benefit of everyone. And this is what Prabhupada is referring to when he says in that first sentence that Sutta is summarizing the whole introduction, because he's summarizing the mood of the sages and their desire to help other people. That's selfless. We're always thinking, in general, myself, what's in it for me? I'll do it if I get something, if I like it, if I get some good results, or anything. I'll do it. That's selfish. I'm thinking of myself, a fish, thinking of myself. But selfless means I'm thinking less of myself and thinking more of others. When will that day come? And they're asking what can help others. Okay, so Srila Sukadeva Goswami was thoroughly realized spiritual master on the Vedanta Sutra, and consequently he also personally realized the commentary. So we're all familiar with Sukadeva Goswami's history of his appearance in this world, how he was in the womb of Vyasadeva's wife, who doesn't have a name anywhere, if you ever noticed that. Anyway, he was in the womb for 16 years. Not wanting to come out, because at the stage of development that he was at in the womb, he was satisfied in his self, in his realization of the self. But by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he went further along in his progress. And that's the thing. We can always make further progress, especially by hearing from the right source. So we should try to take advantage of that. So he went further along and became fully realized in the Bhagavan realization. So there's three levels of realization. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, each is transcendentally more complete than the other. So the Bhagavan realization, where you realize Krishna is the supreme force, and his energy is spread throughout the whole world. He's in the heart of all living entities as the Paramatma, and he is a supreme person who has activities and pastimes that he enjoys all by, you know, not all by himself, but on his own accord. He's the creator of the universe, he's the maintainer of all, and he's the reliever of suffering of the living entities, but he's a person who has his own activities and his own life, you could say. So Sukadeva Goswami fully realized that by hearing the Bhagavatam, and therefore was qualified to speak. And just to show his boundless mercy upon the bewildered materialistic men who want to cross completely over nations, he recited for the first time this confidential knowledge. So a quick review on that also too. So Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Parikshit, right? Maharaj Parikshit got cursed to die. Sukadeva Goswami, by the arrangement of the Lord, appears on the scene. He speaks to Maharaj Parikshit, and who's in the audience? Many. At one point I heard there was 85,000 people in the audience, and they're all very eager, and they all could hear because we weren't limited like we are. Okay, so Suta Goswami was one of the sages in the audience when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking. So he, Suta now is reciting the Bhagavatam for the first time. Okay. So here's another one wonderful Prabhupada statement. Okay, you ready? Hold on to the floor because we don't want anyone tipping over. There's no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy. Like, hello. Don't you think you're happy sometimes? So what does Prabhupada mean by that? Don't you see happy people? You come and you see all these huggy people and they're happy. So how are we saying that there's no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy? Vani, would you like to explain that a little bit? What comes to your mind? Can you speak really loud? Because I know you can. Pretend you're yelling at somebody.
Temporary happiness.
See, she hit the nail right on the head. There is happiness. So Prabhupada's not saying that there's no happiness. But we want happiness that lasts, right? So when you get your new thing and it makes you happy, it's okay, right? So there's happiness. But then what happens? Your new thing could break, or someone could get a better new thing than you. Or even if someone doesn't get a better new thing than you, your new thing gets old really fast, and then they purposely outdate it so that you have to get another new thing. And in order to get all of those things, what do you have to do? Besides ask for your mother, the money, but somebody has to work really hard to get that. So, yuck. And we think that we're okay. That's called illusion. So real happiness never stops. That's what Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam means. Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam. Okay, so there's an ocean, right? And if you want to measure the depth of the ocean, we could have Gaurachandra, Prabhu, measure the depth of the ocean. But it's going to be a challenge. And he's going to, with great endeavor, he's actually going to find the limit. Or he or whomever, okay, is going to find the limit after, you know, 50,000 years of study and 4 PhDs, okay? So, but Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam means that the ocean of devotional service, it's unlimited. It's always increasing. Always. Not just sometime, little by little. Always increasing. So, compared to that happiness, and this is what we have to do when we think that we're happy here. Oh, that was Akendra. I think I'm happy here. Sorry. When you think that you're happy here, remember that one? When you think that you're happy here, you have to remember, what's this happiness that I'm experiencing now compared to an unlimited ocean of ever-increasing happiness? There's no comparison. And that's the point. Okay. Okay, no materialistic creature, nobody, be he the great Brahma or the insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent plan for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature. Permanent plan, insurance. Get some insurance on your car just in case somebody hits you or you hit somebody. Get some life insurance. Get some medical insurance. Get some this insurance. Get some that insurance so that you can be prepared for all the different disasters that are going to happen to you sooner or later in some form or other. You might think, not going to happen to me. Just like Mother Akuti said in her class the other day when she was a young girl and she was doing her teenage nursing assistant program feeding elderly people. Her conclusion from that job was, that's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to become old like them, those old feeble people. That was her conclusion. But what happened to her and me and will happen to the rest of us? It's forced upon you. Those wrinkles, they're forced upon you. Those gray hairs, you can work really hard to get rid of your gray hairs, but it's okay, good luck. But they're forced upon you. You don't want them, they're forced on you. You don't want that sore hip. Okay, sorry. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Yet, unhappy materialists can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. Do you believe that? I want to get out. Do you believe that? Simply by desiring to get out. That's so interesting, isn't it? Because it's actually appears very difficult and very complicated. And it's like, oh my God, from here to what we're considering going back to Godhead, it's like so far and so such a great distance. But actually, just by desire. Now, why does Prabhupada say just by desire? Because it's desire that's got us in trouble to begin with. When we desired to turn, when we were in this, we were there. When we were in the spiritual world and serving Krishna in some way, somehow or other, this funny thought came to our minds in some shape or form or other. Oh, why do I have to do it for Krishna all the time? I want to do it for me. I want to be the center. And that desire, because that desire separates us from the other inhabitants of the spiritual world where everything is for Krishna. Krishna's in the center of everything and everyone's totally happy. So that desire comes to the material world and we're desiring. See, Krishna says, you want to try that? Okay, here. Here's the material world. Try it. See how that goes for you for a while. A few billion, trillion, maha million lifetimes. See how that goes for you. But that desire to enjoy separate from Krishna was what led us to activity, and that activity led us to getting the result of that activity, and that result of that activity was forced upon us and covered our conscience more and more. Desire. So, take that desire, which is the whole goal of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is actually very, very simple. It's to change and train our desires from materialistic endeavor to spiritual endeavor, spiritual desires. Because with spiritual desires, spiritually based desires, so that then one can make progress in spiritual life. Because you desire it, you'll act in that way. Krishna will lead you. Krishna in the heart. He's in your heart. Not just, Krishna's in the heart of all living entities, blah, blah, blah. No, Krishna's in your heart. And he's directing by your desire what happens to you. So simply by desire, change our desire. Now here's another really interesting example that's really old-fashioned, you could say. Ready? All right, because how many of you have met a camel in your life? No, not the cigarettes. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, okay. Here's the story about the camel. Yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. Unfortunately, they are so foolish that they don't want to escape. You could talk on that one, but I'll keep going. Therefore, they're compared to the camel who relishes thorny twigs because he likes the taste of the twigs mixed with his own blood. So we're sitting here and we're thinking that is really less intelligent, as they say, right? Right? Aren't you thinking, I'd never do that? But guess what? we've done it. And we continue to do it because by chewing on those thorny twigs of materialistic desires, we get, remember what Prahlad says? Well, we haven't got to the seventh canto for a while, but Prahlad Maharaj, he says in the seventh canto, as soon as you endeavor for happiness, you get the opposite result. Oh my Krishna. As soon as you endeavor for happiness, you get the opposite result. So in other words, we're endeavoring for happiness by getting a new this or that or whatever, whatever, and immediately but gradually slips in, you get suffering. Here. It's a bad deal here, folks. Tune in and let's get out. Okay. Similarly, to the materialist, his own blood is as sweet as honey. And although he is always harassed by his own material creations, he does not wish to escape. So we have created so many things to be happy. Like, we used to drive around in horses and buggies, but that wasn't fast enough, was it? And so we decided, somebody decided, to invent cars. Somebody in this community, haha, no, sorry, anyway, invent cars. So they invented cars to make life easier, so you could get to one place more conveniently, right? Well, sure. It's just that your car costs more than anything, your whole life's salary these days. Then the insurance, and then the maintenance, and then the this, and then the that, and then somebody bumps it, and then so many things. So all of our all of our creations are harassing us. Just like one might think, I want the newest, best, fastest car. Which one would you call that? A Lamborghini. You're too slow. Okay, so anyway. So you get the Lamborghini, right? Billions of dollars it costs. And then all of a sudden you're sitting here and your Lamborghini is parked very nicely out in the parking lot. And all of a sudden you hear, and you think, oh my God, it's me. They hit me, my Lamborghini. And then you get out and you look outside and you think, oh no, they didn't. They hit the junker right next to you. And you think, what? Oh, I'm happy now. Because they didn't hit me. They hit somebody else. Our materialistic endeavors are just creating anxiety for us, and we don't see it like that. We see it in a different way. But Bhagavatam is meant to change our vision so we can see what's really happening. And I'm going to try to finish the purport. Such materialists are called karmis. Out of hundreds and thousands of karmis, only a few may feel tired of material engagement and desire to get out of the labyrinth. What's a labyrinth? Labyrinth. What's a labyrinth? Much better when you say it correctly. Yes, but I wasn't particular. Yes, it's a maze. It's amazing. Because you get in there and you can't get out. There's a corn maze right down the street there. One time somebody got stuck in the corn maze, and guess what they did? Called 911. And it took them 3 hours to find them. Okay. Only out of hundreds and thousands of karmis, only a few minutes. Such intelligent persons are called gyanis. So gyani, we have this impression that gyani means they must have a PhD. But jnani doesn't necessarily mean material IQ. It means a spiritual IQ. They're seeing, hey, this material world is a lot more problematic than I thought, and I just don't buy it anymore. I'm just not going to buy into the thing that if I do this and I work really hard and I sweat and do this, I'm going to be happy. It doesn't work necessarily. That's knowledge. You can have... materially speaking, a low IQ, not be really materially intelligent, but you could be the most intelligent person if you understand this isn't my home, this isn't a place of happiness. That's jnana, that's transcendental knowledge. The Vedanta Sutra is directed to such a jnani, but Srila Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of the Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men, and therefore he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavat Purana. It is clearly said that this Bhagavatam is the original commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Srila Vyasadeva also instructed the Bhagavatam to his own son, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who was already liberated, or at the liberated stage of transcendence. Srila Sukadeva realized it personally and then explained it. By the mercy of Srila Sukadeva, the Bhagavat Vedanta Sutra is available for all those sincere souls who want to get out of material existence. So the rest of the purport is another couple of paragraphs. It's explaining how the Bhagavatam is the supreme or the highest level of realization. So, and this is also why We try so hard to distribute this knowledge of the Bhagavatam to those who don't even realize that they're suffering yet. They don't even realize it. So by hearing, they can come to that point. Haribol, have a great day. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam is the one unrivaled commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Srila Sripad Sankaracharya intentionally did not touch it because he knew that the natural commentary would be difficult for him to surpass. He wrote his Sariraka Vyas, and his so-called followers deprecated the Bhagavatam as some quote-unquote new presentation. One should not be misled by such propaganda directed against the Bhagavatam by the Mayavadi school. From this introductory shloka, the beginning student should know that Srimad Bhagavatam is the only transcendental literature meant for those who are paramahamsas and completely freed from material disease called malice, envy. The Mayavadis are envious of the personality of Godhead, despite Sripad Sankaracharya's admission that Narayan, the personality of Godhead, is above material creation. The envious Mayavadi cannot have access to the Bhagavatam, but those who are really anxious to get out of this material existence may take shelter of this Bhagavatam, because it is uttered by the liberated Srila Sukadeva Goswami. It is the transcendental torchlight by which one can see perfectly the transcendental absolute truth realized as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Comments or questions ki jai. Yes? Hold on a second.
You can just repeat.
He's coming.
The word unscrupulous.
The word unscrupulous, just opening it up. The unscrupulous men who tried to comment on the Bhagavatam. Unscrupulous means that they're not following the real purpose of the Bhagavatam. They have their own motivation for personal fame or this or that, or to get followings for themselves. They don't have any scruples, morals, to follow, to imbibe the purity, or do they have the level of realization that they can act selflessly? Actually, as we go along in this chapter, this divinity and divine service, there'll be a little bit more opening up of that topic when it explains how we're all motivated by selfish material desires. And only, yeah, okay, text 6. Savai pumsam paro dharmo, and only by unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service can that completely satisfy the self. So that's the okay. So deviating from that is unscrupulous. Any other comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please. Oh, okay, thanks. Okay. Go to Bhakti, because Bhakti was... She's had a question or a comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's not a very intelligent question, anyway. I'll try to ask it. You said in the class that we fall down from the spiritual world, we're with Krishna, enjoying with Krishna. Mm-hmm. If we're with Krishna, means we were satisfied. So why we came back? Because
that's a wonderful question that can be answered in just a few words. There's never been any debate on that question or anything. But that was all sarcastic, because that's a huge topic that there's talk going on. But I'll put it as succinctly as possible. The living entity is never forced to love Krishna. Never. In the material world, you're not forced to love Krishna. And in the spiritual world, you're not forced to love Krishna. We have the same qualities of Krishna, sat, chit, ananda, you know, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But we are teeny, weeny, weeny. And we have free will. So if we use our free will to serve Krishna, then everything's fine. And if we use our free will to try to enjoy on our own, then out of necessity, the place that we're staying has to be changed, because the spiritual world, that's everything is centered on Krishna. In the material world, everything is centered on 10 million different people who think they're the center. That's the brief answer. Stita Di Prabhu?
Prabhu, isn't it true that we also can become, we've worked our way up from a lower life form?
Of course.
We've taken a higher birth, right?
Yes. Thank you for that nice comment. Stita Di Prabhu?
Well, I wasn't going to say this, but they set me up here.
Oh, Stevie. Okay, go ahead.
Well, in one sense, love has to be voluntary. It's not love. It's something forced is not love. What
Correct.
Love is freely given. So in that sense, having the opportunity to indulge in materialistic or some alternate sense of reality has to be there. In one sense, to facilitate the voluntary expression, because it's a choice to love Krishna, and to have a choice, you have to make a choice. And to make a choice, you have to have alternatives to choose from. So everybody in the spiritual world wants to be there. It's not like they're there because they don't have a choice. So I think
Correct.
We have to kind of reevaluate our own choice.
Thanks.
So now that problem's solved.
Thanks.
If anybody's worried about they're enjoying in the material world, or they're happy here, usually you just have to wait 5 or 10 minutes and it'll go away.
Yes,
yeah.
But the thing is that after those 5 or 10 minutes more of suffering, or maybe it's a year of suffering, we still think we're happy here. It's amazing, isn't it? It's called less intelligence. I'll speak for
myself. But another thing is I was looking at the text here, and Prabhupada kept saying the materialistic man.
Yes, true.
Cannot be happy.
Yes.
And the materialistic world, and the materialistic, so he seems to be focusing not so much on the conditional energy, but the attitude towards it that creates the unhappiness.
The attitude, yeah. And that's why even we're in, but we, yes, what you're saying is correct. I'm not arguing with that point, but just to refine a point is that we have to actually evaluate our own selves too and see, yes, we're striving for pure devotional service, but we're a mixed bag. We're a mixed bag. We have materialistic desires. And so it's not that we're always talking about them over there. Those guys are like that. We also have to see that it can apply to some degree to other, to ourselves. And therefore, if we reassess our materialistic attitude, then we can make progress, especially because we get the opportunity to hear from Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandini.